to address any of those. And Marty, if you have any questions or thoughts that you want to give Chris while he's sitting here, now would be a great time.
I'm sitting there. If you go back to my office, on my desk is a tri-pattern narrative on the Tedesco Center off Research Park. And so much of what is going to be proposed will be changes that we would make ourselves through a natural setting. So I'm sitting there, as I come to know, the conversation involves understory, ripples, oxbows, and whatnot. I realize some of these things are both identified and then man-made corrections are made to either augment them or enhance them. I was sitting there listening. In fact, it's surprisingly much of the same story. I guess from what I saw, you're looking at the decades over aerials that this ground has come to be what it is today only recently. And at a point in not that distant future that some of this area was not what it is, it was mine. I guess my takeaway initially is I'm shocked to see that the community has been so aggressive on growth, did not identify a contiguous portion that you were trying to step into, and I thought I would like to know why that was or if that was on a planning basis
for right here,
or, and I get that, but I'm just saying it's just like, you know, Huxley is a shining star success in the county, and to not see next to, you know, Deer Run, this wasn't already taken into on a planning basis. That's an answer I'm looking for. Right now, this we're in a revolution. You guys have certainly done your homework. Thank you for reading the CGC to the levels you've done. I don't know how many times we get into meetings in just privately or in open meetings where we ask people, look at this document. It was prepared with the input of the county. We realize that it's an evolving thing, that the changes will be made. We fully acknowledge that some of our information areas you pointed out on the mapping side of things wasn't correct, but we will work to correct that, and I'm looking forward to having this conversation right now because this is a process in my head. I haven't got anywhere yet, but what you did, you gave me a lot more framework from which to have it, so thank you.
Outstanding. So shameless plug, Marty just mentioned the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor public open house today at 3:30 and 6 o'clock at the ISU Research Park Hub. We are dealing at a county level with many of the same issues that you guys just addressed. So it's kind of interesting to see how we deal with our own house versus how we deal with someone else. Thank you, guys. We'll have you back up if there's questions that need to be answered. Okay, so at this point, we're going to open the public hearing, and we're going to start with the three individuals who have indicated that they would like to speak, and then we'll move on to anybody else, and we're going to start with Mayor Craig Henry from Huxley.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, gentlemen.
This is a lot like a city council meeting in Huxley.
Oh, it's a lot more fun. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate Mr. Chitty's comments about our indirect approach to management. Let me address that at the moment. You made a good comment. I appreciate the fact that you acknowledge the city of Huxley is growing. We spend a lot of time in meetings and plannings, and I promote the fact we need to be proactive for years, and we've done a pretty fair job. When Chris brought this to my attention and I reviewed this document, I want to acknowledge the fact that I think Story County, the supervisors, and Mr. Gardner gave us a piece of paper, because that's what it was, but the proposal was very well done. We have reviewed it in-house, engineering staff, but it pointed out something that we were not aware of, the fact that we really hadn't addressed the growth of our community to the north. We have been trying to address that the last 6 months. We are behind the ball, but we are in a position to support this project, because it does make a lot of sense for our community, and we see a lot of good common sense things in this development. It is contiguous to Deer Creek, and it really ties in with a lot of good things that we see. So that being said, I want to say again, the city of Huxley is supportive of this project to move forward as a project within the city of Huxley.
Okay. You said within the city of Huxley. Talk me through the time. So let's start with you and I met along with the city manager last Thursday, I think, and talked about this. Can you synopsize what we talked about?
We are looking at a couple different options and working with Mr. Gardner on a couple different things. I'm not sure which way we'll go yet. There are possibilities we could actually use the city. We have been in conversation with a couple other landowners out there, their property coming into the city, and we have been trying to move in that positive direction. I'm not at liberty to tell you today or make a comment that we're going to do anything. Our goal is to bring this into the city as a city project. It meets most of our standards. We haven't got a final review back from the city engineer. I don't see any problems with mine, and I see with our preliminary evaluation that he has done in the city of Huxley as an area.
Okay. Thank you. Question for Greg?
Thanks. I spoke to all my concerns.
Next is Joyce Bernstein. Joyce used to be on our conservation board.
Yes, I was on the conservation board for 10 years. Great thing, I've been in conservation all my life. I grew up in wooded areas. My concerns with this project, several, and something that just came to me at this meeting, it's mentioned that Deer Creek is contiguous to this project. I'm not sure quite how that is. Unless you mean, because there is a lot on the west side of Deer Creek that is A1. There's a home there, but not part of Deer Creek. The back side of my lot, our lot, which backs up to lot 18, it's not contiguous to the Iron Bridge flat. It's a separate lot. So that was the question. My major concern is the erosion of the soil on the slopes and around the stream banks of Valley Creek. I see that the developer mentioned working on stream banks in 2019. The stream banks would need to be stabilized before building starts. The deep and erosiveness of the soil on the site would potentially further reduce the water quality of Valley Creek, which flows into the Skunk River. The present woodland and pasture cover helps control the erosion. There will be some opening up of the woodland during building, and I don't know that they've addressed how they would protect the site during construction. I agree with following Story County's comprehensive plan and leaving the area as a natural resource designation.
Question for Joyce? Joyce, thank you. Charles Lee is who I have next.
Good morning.
Can you move over to the other side? I'm sorry about this.
Oh, yeah, that, see, that one, like, we wore it out.
Well, we own the farmland on the north, the east,
right,
the south.
Okay.
And originally there was a 120-acre farm there that my granddad bought in 1937. And it's approximately half timber, half farm. That map you had with the green space and stuff, that's been farmed ever since he bought it, the north end of that, the north half of the property. So that map is very accurate.
I think we established that.
So... And when I was a little kid, I'm going to be 68 years old. When I was a little kid, there was thorn trees all over that timber. And they went out there and cut them down. And tried to remove all the lousy thorn trees that have thorns 6 inches long from them. And they cleaned that timber up, and that valley looks very nice now. And over the years, we've pastured cattle and sheep out there. And it looked like a golf course in the spring. It's that nice. In the last few years, we haven't pastured as heavy, and a lot of the honeysuckle the stuff in the areas up above where it's hard to get to with the tractor or something, it's kind of taken over. And it's not good. When I was a kid, we used to go out there with a spade and cut thistles to keep them out of it. And that open area where they're going to build most of these houses, it's fairly old. It had a few nice large trees, which are still there. But there's a lot of junk trees that are there. And I don't think that will hurt the environment at all to take those out. I think it will improve it. And basically, they're planning to purchase 31 acres off our the southwest corner of our farm. And all but 6 acres of that is timber pasture. And I think he has a great plan, and I'm all for it. And it's been in our family for 80 years, and we're all ready to retire now, and we got to do something with it. And we put it up for sale, or they approached us about buying it, and then we put it listed it, and we made an agreement. And he told me about his plans and everything, and I think it's a great plan. And as far as the houses south of us in Deer Creek, there's houses in there built on ravines. Simple of them. It's a lot worse area than where he's talking about building. It's the area where he's going to build is flat. And it's not in the floodplain. And I think he has a great idea, and I'm all for it.
Thank you.
I
love hearing the stories of people who grew up on the property, played in the streams, absolutely. Let's see. Chris Gardner has asked to come up and address us.
I just want to touch briefly on the real estate.
Absolutely.
In Troy County. I'm a realtor in Troy County. Jerry had mentioned about the development in Hudsley. And actually right now we have Northview Heights, which is on the north end, but there's only a corner lots left and Tom left to have the back spacing left for the sun. So that's all that's left. And then also Centennial West, which has the high school traffic in the front, and then cornfields in the back. So it's not a high desirable location. I haven't seen the urban expansion, but I'm guessing it's probably the west off that Centennial West Road, which would be down to farm ground, which speaks to the plan really discourages building on the farm ground. Also, just a side note, Mr. Lee was not notified that his private land would be in the conservation in the future.
And I think that was existing. Was that existing? What went into the CGC plan? As conservation ground.
That's what I'm asking the question.
Sorry. What's currently listed on our C2C maps as conservation ground, anything that was in there is what had been in Story County forever, right? We didn't put any new plans on. So, Charles, I can't answer you how it ended up as conservation. Easily. Agricultural conservation, right? Yeah. So... all right, so now that's everybody who has requested. Now I'm going to open it up and say anybody who would like to address the board, as we're in our public hearing portion now, may come on up and address us. Yes, ma'am, come on up. Start by introducing yourself.
Am I at the right place?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm Cindy Hildebrand, and my address is 57439 250th Street in Ames. I'm here for a couple of reasons. The first is that I have been doing conservation work for 30 years, and I've been doing restoration work for 25. I've done fires, I've done tree removal, I'm personally responsible for the deaths of hundreds of trees, so I fully understand what restoration is and how valuable it is. And if this were just a restoration project and not a residential development project, I suspect that Mr. Gardner and I would be entirely on the same page. I'm also personally familiar with and have experience with conservation easements, and so I know what they can do and what they can't. But the main reason is because I really am interested in good land use planning. I've lived in Story County since 1977. And during that time, I've seen a lot of good decisions made. I've seen some decisions that I don't think were so good. I've seen woodlands turned into subdivisions, and a lot of the land that we could have been debating what to do with now, the decisions have already been made, and I'm talking about woodlands and prairie remnants. And the reason I spent many hours attending meetings about the C2C is because I saw this document and still see it as a real chance to do better, more informed, more thoughtful land use planning than we've been able to do in the past. And so this is this the decision regarding the subdivision is an interesting new test of the C2C. So with that said, I'd like to read this letter, which was signed by myself and three other people. This letter is being written in regard to the proposed Iron Bridge Rural Subdivision. We are writing because we strongly support local conservation, which includes good land use planning. We are happy that Story County has adopted the Cornerstone Capstone Plan. That plan was widely developed with substantial input from Story County citizens. It became clear through C2C meetings and C2C survey results the people who live and work in Story County place very high value on the protection of water quality and our rural landscape, especially natural and riparian areas. The C2C language reflects these priorities. Iron Bridge is proposed for a parcel of land that has been, that largely has been designated as a natural resource area. In addition, parts of the land that are classified as, quote, agricultural conservation, unquote, have trees. One principle of the C2C plan is that development is to be generally discouraged within NRAs. We agree with the Story County Conservation Analysis that finds the Iron Bridge proposal does not fit that principle. The developers proposing the Iron Bridge subdivision consider it to be a conservation subdivision, and we appreciate their interest in conservation. However, conservation subdivisions generally follow certain principles. Houses are built on the most disturbed and least sensitive part of the land and are clustered on smaller than usual lots. Iron Bridge does not fit that description. We agree with the developers that the Iron Bridge land has invasive plants and would benefit from good restoration work. We appreciate their good intention that restoration work be done by future Iron Bridge homeowners. However, history shows that successful conservation work by homeowners associations is generally the result of certain factors. Those factors include strong, permanent, enforceable legal requirements, regular outside oversight, guaranteed substantial funding, expert knowledge, and agreement by all homeowners regarding land goals, even after homes change ownership. Without those factors, homeowners associations do not have a good conservation track record. If the Iron Bridge subdivision were allowed partly because of promised restoration, how would that work? Who would officially decide how much restoration needed to be done and where, and who would assess the restoration work for quality? And what if future Iron Bridge homeowners did not want to do restoration or pay for it? And let me add a personal note here, it is expensive. That has been a problem for other homeowners associations. Easements and deed restrictions can be very good in ensuring that bad things will not happen on land, but they are not good in ensuring that beneficial things will happen. The impacts of the houses and the septic tanks would be permanent. There is no guarantee that the restoration would be permanent. The letter from District Forester Joe Herring provides excellent restoration information. However, there was no indication that Mr. Herring was ever asked whether putting 17 new houses and 17 new septic tanks on wooded riparian land would affect the water quality, wildlife, or general biodiversity. Most natural resource professionals, if asked that question, would say that the impacts would be significant. The planning and development staff recommended a development compromise that would put almost all the houses on the north part of the parcel, away from the wooded area. The landowners expressed no support for the compromise. The Story County Conservation Director wrote the following, with which we agree. I agree that we must allow for residential developments in the county, but I cannot support those developments when they negatively impact areas we have designated as important natural areas. We must support what we state in the comprehensive plan. The Planning and Zoning Commission voted 4-1 to not rezone the land. We respectfully ask that you concur with their recommendation. Thank you for considering this letter. And I will keep the copies.
You said three people signed it. Tell me who the three are.
Okay. Besides myself, the three signees are Roger Maddox, Ames, Sheldon Spencer of Huxley, and Jim Pease, also of Ames. And finally, I think that it's important to understand that when evaluating whether development is going to be a problem for wildlife, you don't choose generalist species like deer. Deer, for better or worse, can get along just about anywhere. I just came back from visiting my mother in Michigan, and they are in very urban areas there. You don't shoot, and another example is raccoons. Raccoons can manage just about anywhere, too. You look at sensitive species. You look at species like warblers, native sparrows, owls, woodland-specific butterflies. And if you look at the impact of housing on those species, you come up with a very different answer than you do if you look at deer. And finally, this is really not a restoration decision, although certainly restoration would be wonderful for this land. This is a development decision. The decision is whether or not this woodland is the appropriate place, according to our own newly adopted county land use plan, for 17 new houses and 17 new septic tanks. That's the decision that is before you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I see Brenda coming to the microphone.
My name is Brenda Brink, 29514 U.S. Highway 69, Huxley. And I am familiar, I'm a resident in this township, I'm familiar with that area. And I'm not going to repeat what the two ladies before me said. Totally agree with them, I totally agree with the recommendation. We have to protect our water. We have to protect our water. I'm going to say that over and over again. Our water is at risk. This is a great way to protect it, and I see no reason to set a precedent this early in the process of going against what all those months put into the C2C. All those months of putting into the C2C, and I respect that, and I think we need to go with that recommendation.
Any questions for Brenda? Brenda, thank you. Anybody else? Yeah, Charles, come on up.
I've heard all these comments and everything, neighbors and stuff. Don't you think the people that have owned that land for many years should have a say in this? We've never been contacted by the county about what they plan to do with this land.
I don't think
we've planned for 30 years to develop it something. And we've had people come and ask to buy an acre to build a house out in our timber. We've always turned them down. We said someday we're going to have a developer.
Sure.
That's interested, buy it and develop it and make a nice area.
Absolutely. And so, Charles, I think that you're misconstruing what the agricultural designation, agricultural conservation designation means. It doesn't mean that the county is planning on coming in and co-opting the ground or anything else. It's simply a zoning overlay that exists on part of this property. That's all it is.
But my dad died in 2001, and we had a survey, they put a value on it, and the guy that did it recommended he put a higher value on it because it's prime development land. And Huxley, when my granddad bought that farm, there were maybe 200 people that lived in Huxley. And where Timber Lane comes off 69, from there north was farmland. And now everything is developed per up to our fence line. And the houses in Deer Creek, south of our south pasture, several of those houses are built next to ravines that drain into our pasture. Mm-hmm. And those same people are getting up here and complaining about what we're doing with ours. But who, when they built their house, it was fine.
Well, there's no question that times change, right? But what I took away from everybody who spoke here is the mayor of Huxley, I think, without being able to give specifics, I think indicated very strongly a desire for Huxley to move north. Is that fair, Craig, that I represent that's what I took from what you had to say? Okay. So.
Well, that's what our plan has been for years.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're talking about the county making the plan the last 2 years, or a year and a half.
Right, but ground is different when it is not a municipality. It's treated different. And this is not yet in a municipality, right?
But it could be.
But that doesn't change the county stance if it's county ground.
And also, I'd like to say that if he builds 17 houses in this area, you know how many tax dollars that's going to bring into the county?
I know exactly how many tax dollars that's going to bring. That's what I do.
He's planning to build $400,000 houses on up. Maybe some of them might be twice that.
Yep.
and you figure out how many dollars you're getting in tax money now off of that property that's not doing anybody any good except collecting golf balls. And
sure, but every decision we make was based on tax revenue, the county would look a lot different than it looks. We got a higher purpose than just tax revenue.
No, right? I know, but
we got to consider highest and best use. Absolutely, it's a factor. It's something that we keep in mind, but it's highest and best use within the county of every piece of ground. And so, I saw you bristle when we started talking about the agricultural conservation. Zoning designation, land use designation, that is truly something on a map based on the resources in that area, and it's truly something that's got to get refined. I mean, I think we knew that going into the day. Now we've identified it even more strongly.
Well, I lived on that farm my whole life, and when I was a kid, for the 80-acre farm that he turned into a golf course,
sure.
They took a lot of trees. An awful lot of trees.
Yeah, I was really interested in the aerials. I was watching as the golf course came in.
And they made a nice lake up there and everything. It's a nice area. People in the community love it.
Sure, but it's different than the ground you grew up on.
Well, it's right next to it.
No, I understand, but you probably spent a lot of time stomping around on that ground.
I've been over every inch of it, but... Yep. Like I say, they say that's a forest area. When I was younger,
sure,
there was nice big trees up there, but all these smaller trees have came in over the years.
Absolutely.
They haven't improved it at all.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Yep. Anybody else? And then we're going to go back to Chris Garger. Okay, Chris, come on back. All right, you want to tie a bow on all this?
Yeah, we've heard a lot of great things. I get it. And I just want to point out again, I mean, what this does, it, doing nothing doesn't accomplish anything. It doesn't accomplish the restoration, you know, this great talk about the water quality. I mean, that's what our development, it's hard to see. Like, you see residential, and you're always, your assumption is housing is bad and development's bad, but that's just not the case. If we can't legally do anything but help the water quality there. We're not just dumping polluted water into the stream. We can't, and we don't want to. And this is where I want to put my family and my kids. Like, this is where I want to leave my legacy. You think I want to pollute the water that my kids are going to drink? I mean, this is, like I said, this one's personal. It's not.
I get it.
Yeah.
And I think that it's fair to ascribe that to some people. I don't think you can ascribe that to me. And what I'm telling you is my concerns with this have more to do with the reality of this being county property right now, county infrastructure, and us adhering to what the county's long-range plan is. Now, what the county's long-range plan is, that changes the second Huxley annexes and comes in, and it becomes Huxley's plan on what happens. And all I'm saying to you is, this one for me is different than when we talked about Bella Woods, and it's different than when we talked about the Irons.
Okay. Can I ask before you make a motion that I'd rather take a motion for tabling than denial at this point? Are you going to move right to your vote?
Oh, I think we're going to close the public hearing when you're done and when everybody else is done, and then Marty and I are going to talk about where we go from here. I have no idea where he is on this. This is the first time Marty's got to wrestle with something like this.
Some of the other stuff is pretty straightforward, and you know, it's a pretty linear walk between the proposals and the outcome. This is hardly there. My question to you is, listening to the mayor, and I think you can read between the lines there, this is likely to move into the city of Huxley at some point, and I think it would be wise to do. When you move at that point, I would suspect that the city of Huxley would like to see 17 homes come onto their septic system. And that's an expense that's going to have to be borne by all the homeowners that will, you know, potentially be here. I mean, I assume that you're taking that into account on a personal basis, but I would think that that would be a consideration that would have to be out there for anybody looking to be out there with you. You know, I guess I'm just saying, it's just like, not only if they had the ability to buy and build, the likelihood of annexation would lend them to another added expense to living in this subdivision.
So your question is, just have I thought?
Well, I guess that to me it's just like when you start putting the pieces together to get to the what an outcome could be, that I guess that you're, you know, I'm sure a developer of your demonstrated abilities would probably know that that would be the likely case going forward. And I think that, you know, once you move into the city, you take on their strictures as you move from county to the city. I'm telling you your industry. I'm not trying to be that guy giving you information here.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, we've talked from there. We talked through Plan B, as we're calling it, and fully aware of that. And I have no intention of stopping the building from done. So if that needs to go through the city, then that's what we'll have to do. So.
Okay. Anything else for us?
Thank you.
Any questions? Yeah. No, thank you. Is there anybody else who'd like to address us before we close the public hearing? Yeah, Mike Cox.
Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You know, I think this is an interesting issue, one that we find ourselves at the nexus of many different issues with this. Resource conservation, responsible development, economic development. We know we have a housing issue in the county. We know we need to do more on all these levels. And so this is an interesting discussion, and I applaud the supervisors for hearing this out. And Jerry has done a tremendous job of compiling everything and really looking at all the different angles and appreciate his work. Chris and Bob have done a tremendous job of responding to those staff requests and responding to public comment. You're seeing a tremendous process here in front of you, and I applaud that and thankful for your thoughtful deliberation on it. A couple things I just wanted to clarify. I think there's some mischaracterizations out there, and that is, you know, you hear a lot of the reference to conservation in this area and what conservation has said about this area. Or maybe some interpretations on that. This area is not a primeval forest. It's not pristine. There is very few of those, if any, in the state. In fact, the state is arguably, depending on which source you look at, either the most altered from its natural condition, most altered state, or the second most altered state in our 50. So we know that. So there's no representation that this is a pristine forest that must be maintained with a no-touch approach. The interesting part is that none of our resource lands are in a situation that they can withstand pressures from invasive species or pressures from people on their own, and they all take kind of our assistance in restoring those or helping to keep them in as natural a state as possible. Cindy had some very wonderful words about that, and when you look at the benefits to wildlife, it's important to think about not only those generalists that Cindy mentioned, but also those specialists. And there is not the ecological web, we don't understand it all. And it's so intricate and so intertwined that it's very difficult to tease out one piece of it or another. And therefore, we do the best we can to manage on an ecological basis. Yes, there are a tremendous number of plants on this property that if they were on Story County Conservation property, we would very actively manage those or attempt to very actively manage those in a way to restore the more native species. And Cindy pointed out that's a very long-term process and a very expensive process, and that it is. It takes years. And in fact, you probably in any given piece of land, you're never going to be done. You might be done for a period of time, and then you're going to be back at it again. It's not a one-shot and you're done process. It takes a lifetime. There's another comment that there was no regeneration of trees on the property, and that's that. With all due respect to everyone that's looked at the property, there is regeneration, and the property is really divided up into, if you will, and Chris can probably reference this, but there's the western piece and then there's the eastern piece. There was no fence line there with the upland pieces on that that are can be proposed for development are two very different resource areas. On the western side, it's a younger forest. You saw from the photos that much of that was cleared. You have a higher tree population density in there right now. You probably got 300 to 400 trees per acre in there right now. There's more diversity in the species in that piece right now. It's a newer forest. It was cleared, now it's coming back. There are less invasives in that piece right now. The eastern piece, the piece that was forested more, or I should say pastured more, had a clearly a larger pressure on it from pasturing, and so you do have more of those, more of the honey locusts and more of the multifloral rose and those kinds of invasives. But you're also getting regeneration. You do have some large oaks. Those large oaks are nearing the end of their life. They've got a number of years left, and with good management, they can live longer. But you're also getting some regeneration, and the regeneration you're getting are the shade-tolerant species. So you're getting more maple regeneration, getting more basswood regeneration. Those are coming up there. And they will fight. They will fight with those invasive species. They will fight with that honeysuckle. Since they're shade tolerant, they will do better. You're not going to get oak regeneration in its current condition because oaks need this more sun. They're not shade tolerant. It's interesting if the best management practice on that for the resource would be to go in there and do some more management. Granted, absolutely granted. However, I think it's different than when you look at that property's designation, or arguably so, portion thereof designation as natural resource area that has been on the books for quite some time. And I guess recently then reasserted through the C2C plan. In that this is an important corridor. This is an incredibly important natural corridor. One of very few that we have in the county that has both some upland ecosystems and some riparian or some floodplain ecosystems. Both of those are key, and both of those are very different. And I think, as Chris alluded to, those are different. Fragmentation, what this does is put 17 homes in development in roughly an 18-acre piece of the upland piece, and this really fragments that corridor. As a rule of thumb, an ecologist will look at more fragmentation means less diversity, less fragmentation means more diversity from the plant and animal flora and fauna content. So you'll see that, and this one is really, this property is kind of at a nexus point or a bottleneck, if you will, so the narrowing down of that corridor right through here, particularly when you look at the upland piece where these houses or this development is proposed. So it really does fragment that, and you'll get more of those generalist species. Again, as Cindy mentioned, more raccoons, more possums, that kind of like that fragmented area, and less of those specialist species that we're already kind of pushing to their stress thresholds right now for where they survive. More of those that she mentioned are species that need those larger tracts, and there are more of those than there kind of are these generalist species that we refer to more commonly than we recognize more commonly. So that's important, I think Cindy alluded to it well, or stated it well. This is really a question of, is this the right place for development, restoration side. I wish I had the magic panacea that we could come to the board supervisors and say, you know, here's the best way to restore natural resources, and here's a mechanism to do it on private and public land. We don't have that. We don't have all those tools. We don't have it. Shy of that, we know that the restoration really is kind of a separate issue. But this is an area that I feel development is going to degrade the natural function of that upland area, and it's going to compromise the integrity of that comprehensive plan that was publicly vetted and developed. Granted, there's different perspectives on whether or not it's consistent with that C2C. I won't get into all of that. Maybe you got my comments, and Jerry had my comments on those in the staff report. So I appreciate your consideration, and we urge you to uphold the staff's recommendation, planning and zoning's recommendation.
Thanks, Mikey. Question for Mike?
Nope.
Appreciate your input. Anybody else wishing to address the board? All right, we're closing the public. You want to close out, or are you good? All right, we're going to close the public hearing. Now it's time for the board to discuss this. I want to make a couple of comments, and then Marty, you can have at it. So I'm a fan of the C2C plan. It's not perfect. It's not final. It's a living, breathing document that absolutely we knew of things when we adopted that we needed to dig in and change, and we're going to continue to find things. And I'm a believer that we've got to follow that process. That's one of the reasons that we got a report card for the board and the county that we're going to follow every year, making sure that this doesn't sit on a shelf and gather dust and become obsolete. And the way those amendments occur, or the way consideration for those amendments occur, is you have very specific items, projects, proposed projects, all kinds of things that come in, and you recognize, oh, here's an issue that we've got at the C2C plan, and we better dig in and figure that out. But it is not project-specific, at least in my mind, that you amend things. It can bring you forward problems that you've got to deal with, but you would make amendments to C2C in a more holistic, applicable, across-the-board kind of process, and you have to analyze each and every project based on the facts on the ground as the project comes forward, even if it's not beneficial to that project, even if you think you're going to make changes down the road. So I'm saying all that as it relates to this project. Chris, we can't, in my mind, we can't analyze this project based on what should be in the C2C, what might happen in Huxley in the future that we don't have any official notification of. We can't analyze it based on the timing of what it would have been before the C2C plan, or what it might be down the road as the C2C plan gets more developed. We've got to analyze it today. And so for me, for that reason, it makes this real problematic, especially when you go one step further and say the county infrastructure out there to service what we have now, let alone an additional 17 really nice properties, is not sufficient. I think I've been pretty clear all the way through. I'm a fan of development. I'm a fan of the developments you've done in Story County. I can't find a way to get to support of this one. Now, I heard you ask just a minute ago, is there something we can do other than deny? And I don't know where Marty's going to end up. You know, as I look at it today, without Morris here, it's going to be two people voting. And since I know where I'm headed, I kind of know where this is going to end up. We have three options as I see it. We can move and support the resolution, which would support the development and pass all this. We can move and deny the resolution, which would be in support of Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation and other staff comments. Or we can either not move it, or it gets moved and not seconded, in which case nothing. It doesn't get approved, but it doesn't get denied. It gives everybody a chance to take a step back and see where we go from here. I think that option, and Jerry, I just look to you on this, that's problematic for the Planning and Zoning Commission because it doesn't directly refer it back to them, but it doesn't deny it. I mean, it doesn't approve, it doesn't deny. So it's in essence, these resolutions never existed.
They took a vote to deny the rezoning and the subdivision. There is something in the planning
to come up to the microphone. Ask him process questions.
Yeah, they did vote 4-1 to deny the rezoning and the subdivision. We do have something in the land development regulations that does state that if there's a denial, that you need a 2/3 vote, which would be 2 of the 3 to support or to deny the request of me.
Right.
So
the two of us, if we go opposite directions, we get nothing done today. Is that what you're telling me?
It would be a support.
And it wouldn't be a denial.
Correct. You would need a majority.
So either the two of us go the same direction or nothing happens.
On each of them.
Okay. Thank you. Thoughts?
It's been an interesting morning. It came out of a very informative drainage district issue that I think has a nice little overlay for the issue we have at hand. And the fact that this is a drainage district that will be coming into the city of Ames here. Listening to what I heard this morning, I believe that this property will at some point become part of Hustle. And I think it will be true for such. I would have to say that I have a comfort in development. I like the idea that, you know, that we have the ability to bring people to our communities and allow them to kind of own some lives that they like. I believe, though, without Loris here at the table, I would probably be disinclined to take this to a vote. I would ask that we would move this back possibly a week and that we would give her the opportunity to speak to this. So I would ask for a motion to be made that we bring this back to our
show. So you can do that by tabling it?
Yes.
Moving to table it? Well, let's just talk this through. You can do it by... Yes. You can table it, in which case there has to be a motion to take it off the table in the future. You can defer to a date certain, or you can take no action, which then, in essence, it would go back to Jerry and Chris working together to see if and when this would ever come forward again. If there were substantial amendments, it would have to go back through Planning and Zoning Commission before it.
I think you could take a motion to table it to have it come back at another time before the board to take action.
Sure, you can. If you're talking about this specific resolution, these specific plans, absolutely you can decide for us to address it down the road. And all I'm saying is, for me, I have no idea where Loris is. Marty, I don't know for sure where I think you're headed on this. For me, if nothing changes, if we get no new information, I'm not going to support this because I don't think it fits in the county under our current structure. Now, if we get new information, if we find out that this is a growth area for Huxley and Huxley intends to annex out there, if we find out that we adjust what's in the C2C that makes something like this more favorable in our existing plans, then I think it has to go back through planning and zoning before it comes to us because it would be a substantive change. And so what I'm questioning is, if that's true, so the reason to table it and move it forward is because you believe that there's a reasonable idea that we can pass this as it sits.
I would give the interim time between this day and that day.
Okay.
We are missing the voice at the table to speak to this on a questioning basis, and you know that she would be invested in seeing an outcome here. I would give her the opportunity that in her absence, if there's anything that she would hear from testimony provided today and the meeting that's conducted today, that she might have some questions, quite possibly we did not think to ask, or lines of address that we might either concur with or disagree with and would cause a conversation to be had amongst ourselves.
Okay. So you're asking for a week?
I would be comfortable with 2, but I would take the week.
Jerry, do you have any...
I'm looking for a little direction in that sense. Pardon me?
Do you have any work to do? I mean, if we defer action, you don't have to prepare anything else. You got to, it'd be like a
second. The work is done.
Yeah.
But we would probably go through the same presentation.
Is that a hardship?
We could send out notices again. Is it a hardship? It's never a hardship.
Good answer.
We'd be more than happy to go through our presentation again. If that's the wishes of the board.
Well, you've heard what I've got to say. What do you guys say? So what I say.
Guys, ahead again. I have made really clear where I come down on this specific project right now. I think it's completely reasonable that you would want to bring this back as you've had time to digest everything and as Loris gets to come back and weigh in. And so if you want to defer action, tell me whether you want 1 week or 2 weeks.
I would move that we defer this item to bring it back, what is it, 7th, February,
okay. That's my motion. I'll second. So Shelley, it would be a public hearing item. If this passes, I don't think we need to re-notify property owners. They were notified of this one, and if they're interested, I would hope they're either listening or watching to this and can come back to address it. I would say that we probably don't need the full-blown presentation. Next time, Loris is great at listening to these things, and I know she'll go through this if she hasn't already with a fine-tooth comb. So, further discussion?
No.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. These items are deferred to next week. Thank you, everybody. All right. Now, hopefully, we've got some things we can move through. Let's see. Additional items. Consideration of purchase agreement with O'Halloran International for the purchase of a 2018 steel dump truck in the amount of $223,964. This is an item that was requested to buy in FY18 budget. We have money remaining this year. The board suggested that we go ahead and pull it forward to this year. Anything to add to that?
Nope, that came out of our budget discussion and needs to be on the official items because it wasn't budgeted in this current year.
Do I have a motion?
You have a motion to purchase from O'Halloran International a steel dump truck for the amount of $223,964.
Second. Discussion. Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. Next item, consideration of a quote from Ames Ford for the purchase of two pickup trucks in a total amount of $42,670. Same thing I just said before. These were items that were on the FY18 budget. We have money this year. We thought we'd go ahead and give them. Darren, anything to add?
And I would make a motion to purchase from Ames Ford the two pickups in the amount of $42,670.
Second. Discussion. Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Consideration of quote from Van Wall for the purchase of two John Deere R240 disc mowers, total amount of $21,800. Same thing. Anything to add?
Nothing. Make a motion to approve the purchase of two John Deere disc mowers from Van Wall's for $21,800.
Second. Discussion.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. Thank you, Darren.
Thank you.
Consideration of Resolution 1780 approving the 4 Mile Creek watershed. And this is Leanne Harder and John Swanson. Hi, John. Thanks for sitting through all that, John.
Yes, I'll keep mine short and sweet and to the point. So you guys have had a good morning so far, but some great discussions that really pertain to the 4 Mile Creek and the Watershed Management Authority. Quick background, this management plan has been recently completed. And as I'll go into some detail, I've been hired to lead the implementation effort as we move forward. And as you see this resolution in front of you, the Management Authority has asked that we contact and go out and outreach to all members of the Management Authority for the consideration to approve this plan. Really not tying any member to any action, really a show of support so you know what we're doing as we move forward with trying to reduce flooding and improve water quality. Quick background on the WMA. 2010, the state passed legislation that's allowed for the creation of these watershed management authorities. Really across the state, we're having a lot of the same people sitting at the table, DNR, soil and water conservation districts, other conservation agencies talking about water quality, and they saw a need statewide to bring other entities to the tables. That would be counties themselves, the cities, other jurisdictions. And here we have kind of the Des Moines Metro Watershed Management Authorities, the ones I am directly involved with. Here we have Four Mile Creek, and outlined there in red at the very top of the watershed is Story County. And although a reasonably small portion of the watershed, a key portion, because it is the top of the watershed. Worth mentioning both Walnut Creek, they're the western suburbs of the metro, Four Mile Creek, they're in the center, and Mud Camp Spring on the eastern portions have all completed these watershed management plans. Beaver Creek was just created in December, and they are now pursuing funding to create their management plan. But the real big picture is, why am I here today? It's because we're seeing this across the metro, across the states, streets underwater. It really all started with flooding. We're, one reason or another, we're seeing bigger storm events. With increased development, you're seeing water is moving in different ways than it did historically. And this is what really was bringing water to the attention of the local communities. And that water quality goes hand in hand with that water, and flooding goes hand in hand with water quality. It increases flows. We now see increased pollutants. There's a coworker of mine walking through a creek that, before changes happened to the watershed, simply did not have erosion to that size and magnitude, as well as nutrients, bacteria, all these pollutants that are in the same watersheds. But really looking at here, I have a slide I took out of the Walnut Creek presentation because it's a really good depiction of how we got to being here today. It was a long, ongoing process to get public interaction, looking at what's actually happening in the watershed and GIS analysis. Before I came here, before this plan was completed, our staff walked every mile of Four Mile Creek. They drove every road, looked at what's happening in every crop field, and talked to the cities about where their stormwater is going, because to make specific recommendations for Four Mile Creek, we really have to know what's happening in Four Mile Creek. And the board of the WMA played an ongoing role in that plan development. Here's a quick synopsis of some of the data that came out of that plan. Stream stability, so stream bank erosion, a big topic when you talk about streams. But what we have here is, as you can see, there's a lot of color on that map, not a lot of blue. The blue is the stable. But what that tells us is stream bank erosion is prevalent throughout the watershed. And as we pursue funding and prioritize what we're going to do to Four Mile Creek, oftentimes what this map really shows is stream stability is not necessarily the best use of funds. And we need to prioritize, if we do attack those stream banks, where is the best use of funding. So this plan really goes into what recommendations need to happen, what are the prioritization of those recommendations, and how should we really move forward specifically for Four Mile Creek. These management plans then create a broad range of goals. These goals tie to very directly to Four Mile Creek, starting with water monitoring. If we're going to be investing in the watershed, making changes, we really need to strategically plan how we can measure those changes in the watershed. Engaging of partners, really the whole basis of these WMAs, to bring everyone to the table, understanding that without working together, we're not going to make realistic changes to that watershed. Four Mile, specifically down in the metro, the lower greenway area, creating a linear greenway park, removing houses out of the floodplain, cultivating consistent implementation, actually seeing projects on the ground is the real goal starting this year, moving forward, and something we hope to see a lot of moving forward for years to come. A few others there, finding funding, everything costs money. We need to find funding, we need to utilize our funding options we currently have. And move forward. Developing policies and consistent guidelines, something I'm excited to hear about, the things that Story County has been doing, something that I'm working with the Des Moines metro communities themselves to get to that point, looking at development is going to happen. How are we going to let it happen? What does each community want that development to look like? And what does the watershed need it to look like? And then I take those very broad goals and we bring it down to a very much more specific series of recommendations. What does water monitoring look like? What are those options? Urban stormwater management. Four Mile Creek's are quickly developing, about 50% urban. Agricultural conservation practices. Education outreach, we throw that up there because that is really the basis of everything. Without people understanding why these things need to be done, they will not happen. I've spent years working with farmers and landowners in cities, urban residents. If I go to them and say, you need to build this, and they don't understand why, there is no scenario where that's going to happen. It's not until they choose that this needs to happen. It's a full understanding, and that all starts with education and outreach. And finally, then again, policy and ordinance recommendations. Taking a step further in the plan, it does make some specific recommendations in this one area, detention basins. Flooding was one of the first priorities of the Fort Mark Creek watershed, followed closely by water quality. But a part of the plan, they did take this and make a recommendations for a series of potential detention locations. These are strategic places where large detention basins could be located to have the most impact on the water.
How large is the detention basin?
It varies greatly by the drainage area. As you get up into some of those upper portions, they may be 1 to 5 acres. As you move further down in the watershed, you have a larger drainage area. They could be 5 to 10 acres.
So this wouldn't even be a wetland. It would just be an area that in heavy rain events, these would hold water and then they flow out.
Correct. And wetlands, they go into that as well. Wetlands are important for water quality. You simply cannot slow down the flood events the same.
Right.
But there are ways that we're looking at in a lot of areas that we can build these detention basins to have the same water quality benefits as a wetland.
By only in heavy rain events.
No, we're actually can. There's been a lot of studies done across the metro that we can strategically change the outlet structure that even small rain events are managed, and that is actually the key to the water quality. And that's something with all of our detention basins we're looking at doing now as part of the WMA is treating small rain events and large rain events.
Okay.
And why am I here today? Polk Soil and Water Conservation District is my employer. I've actually spent the last 5 years at the SWCD working on several lake restoration projects. But essentially, we play that really cohesive bond between we go out and we work with landowners, we do the stream field assessments, we do the engineering. And historically, the Polk County, we've really been involved in lots of watershed projects. And for that reason, we were funded, essentially hired to lead these WMA implementation activities. And I throw this picture up there. It's a terrible picture of Big Creek Lake. We have an algae bloom there, a project I spent years working on. But the purpose here is each of these watersheds is very different. And the issues within the watershed is just as different amongst them. So when talking about the 4 Mile Creek plan, I'd like to just really hit on how we did spend the time out in the field to look at what are the issues with 4 Mile Creek. The main issues they found were sediment and nutrients in the upper portions of the watershed, stormwater and bacteria specifically in the more urban portions of the watershed. And as we've been hired to move forward with implementation services, we really broke it down into these categories that this is the basis of how I am moving forward. And it all starts again with education and outreach. That proceeding forward to actually getting practices on the ground, finding funding to do those practices. We've had a lot of success even this first year doing so, monitoring. But really, our role is, again, that cohesive bond. There are some things we're very good at as a district. We're very good at working with farmers and landowners. But there's many other things that we need to rely on partners to do, collaborating with them, facilitating, letting others take the lead. Polk County Conservation Board is very interested in water monitoring. They've dedicated employees to monitoring sites across the entire Polk County area. Fort Mark Creek, there's a half a dozen sites being monitored biweekly by staff, and we hope to facilitate and grow that in the watershed.
When you talk about monitoring, as you see in just agriculture as the remote monitoring abilities take shape and it just becomes more and more a common practice, is there anything that you're willing to do to the water monitoring on a remote basis coming to the floor?
Yes, and water can be very on the remote side, there's water marking that can measure real change across the entire watershed over time. We're kind of working closely with the Iowa Flood Center that has real-time water monitoring. It is the best option to track changes over time.
Conservation practices. We've actually been installing, we have lots of new practices, things like bioreactors, saturated buffers, things a lot of people don't really
agree about those. But yeah. I'm just saying on something that allows you to have data derived on a remote basis that feeds it back.
Yep, we're doing that on a full stream method as well as installing them with these new conservation practices to see if they're really making a difference and how so in 4 Mile Creek.
Right, is it on real time? Mm-hmm. It was my suspicion.
Yep. Expensive but available. Just going into what does this management plan really mean? Some of the other watersheds we've worked on, Easter Lake, that management plan was completed in 2012. Implementation began right after 2013 with hiring a coordinator to lead efforts. That grew into collecting DNR funds, Department of Agriculture funds, funds leveraged from local cities. Next thing you know, we had a $15 million lake and watershed renovation. And all began with outreach. We have a public meeting there, hundreds of people attending. We're holding 35 educational events per year, and that correlated to, since 2013, we've actually installed over 150 practices on private lands within the watershed.
Which is how we're going to end up getting where we need to go.
Exactly. It simply cannot be done on public lands. It simply cannot be done only by jurisdictions. It has to be done privately, publicly, throughout. We talk about agriculture plays a big part in these things, and when we go out and we work with landowners, these things all cost money, and we understand that that is an issue, and we really, as Iowa has done historically, have cost share options to trying to reach some of these goals. We're excited in our first year of implementation, we've actually received two different grants. I heard mention of the Water Quality Initiative at your earlier Drainage District meeting. Four Mile Creek is a recipient of that, so we were able to hire another full-time coordinator. She has her own funds to do cover crops, bioreactors, all the wetlands, as well as Regional Conservation Partnership Program. I love acronyms, RCPP. Actually a statewide federal private grant, multi-million dollar, where they selected high priority watersheds. And Four Mile was selected largely because our plan was completed. We were ready to move into implementation, and we were selected as one of several Iowa watersheds to fund those practices. And again, I'd like to end with, I'm talking all these changes, implementation. What does that look like as you drive across Four Mile Creek watershed? That looks like native prairie buffers along streams. That looks like reduced tillage. And we talk about flooding and water quality. These things, they address both. We're talking soil health. We're talking infiltration. We're talking reduced runoff. Wetlands, both ag and urban. This is a wetland installed in the city of Ankeny, but the same types of wetlands we're looking to install in the agriculture areas, we're also looking to install in the urban areas. And then finally, green infrastructure. Here we have Delaware Avenue in Ankeny. Water that once ran right up the streets, right into a storm sewer, hot in the summer, full of salts in the winter, dumped right into Four Mile Creek, now dumped into these bioretention cells. And then with permeable pavers, we've actually been working quite close with the city of Slater. They had some funding opportunities we matched with some grants looking at permeable pavers. An exciting practice here is the city of Charles City installed these in their town square alongside Union, West Union up in northeast Iowa. And why did they install them? They installed them because they're right on the Cedar River, and people came to their town to utilize that resource. They were able to, actually one of the largest paver locations in the entire United States is here in Iowa, and it's because water quality is a hot topic here, and we want to address it both urban and ag. That's all I have for you, but really just wanted to give an opportunity to talk about what we're doing, a brief overview of the plan. You have the link there to the entire plan. It's quite long, as it's about as exciting as you can imagine, but I'm here available for any questions.
So I just want to compliment all of you on the way you put, I thought the way you put the Four Mile watershed together was really creative. Way outside the box thinking in the way you were able to bring all the different entities together. We're actually one of the lead players on the Squaw Creek watershed, which is primarily here in Story County, and are moving ahead later in the agenda on the Cagley Branch watershed. We have an RFP in the field to do assessments of all of our HUC 12, one more HUC 10, but then all the rest of the HUC 12 in Story County, which I think will put us way ahead as we start looking at trying to form all of these on a countywide basis. And what you showed for the Four Mile Creek is also true when you think about the Skunk River. Story County, while there's a little bit that's spilled over north of us, we are really the headwaters of the entire Skunk River.
Yep.
We need to keep that in mind. So thank you for everything you're doing.
Yeah.
Marty, any questions?
No, I heard your name as I came on the board last summer and said it was something that was really making a difference, and that, you know, I appreciate what level we are in this district, that you took the time and shared with us what you did, because I had not seen some of this up till, you know, just today.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good deal. All right, so we're considering Resolution 17-8.
I move to consider the Resolution 17-8 approving the Four Mile Creek Watershed Master Plan.
And I'll second. Discussion.
Good presentation.
Thank you.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. It passes. Thanks, John. Have a great day. Next is consideration of Rosalind Mackey Harris as recommended consultant for the Animal Control Shelter Construction Improvement. You mean we own an animal shelter? When did that happen? Is that flashing green?
It is, yes.
Okay, good.
Still is.
It wasn't earlier, Shell. What'd you do? Did you give it the evil eye? Jeff, how you doing?
Very good. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Start by introducing yourself.
Yes, Jeff Harris with Rosen Mackey Harris, Architects and Ames. Thank you.
All right. Take us through. You guys have been meeting on this. You had you went through the animal shelter. Tell us what we're looking at today.
Well, we put this out as an RFP, and the only response we ended up with was from Rosen Mackey Harris, and so we went ahead and went through the scoring process, and
amazingly, they won.
Yeah.
Crazy how that happens. Yep.
And he came back with I believe you had a copy of his proposal, and we'd like you to consider that with the bidding service options and the construction service options.
Both.
Oh.
Okay.
For a total of $21,700.
Absolutely.
And this would be looking at doing the upgrades that are requested for safety and security in the animal control shelter, and possibly some additional construction.
Yeah, so this would give us an entire overview of the project, and I would hope it would include things that have to be done now, things that could be done now or a little bit later, and things that we should be thinking about longer term.
Right.
Is that the right way?
Yeah, exactly. I think we'd want to prepare a master plan of some sort for improvements. And
I'm afraid we're going to get a sticker shock.
Yeah,
I think so,
too.
So, additional thoughts that we need to know before we enter into this is something that's a necessary component of getting that animal shelter to the point it needs to be.
I don't have any, Sue. Do you have anything you want to add?
Okay. Leanne, do you have something?
Just representing these two as staff, and as per the memo I did prepare for today, we do ask that you ask the county attorney's office to help us begin contract discussions with Jeff and his firm and bring that back on February 14th.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Questions, Marty?
I'm glad to see that you guys put the time into this as a facility. We were fortunate it became available as we were doing the money we had. We could be better by it. Taking this one on, we're converting the facility that's not meant to be what we're using it as or propose it to be. It's kind of in that special place that just where it lies in relationship to the property sale owner and the body water out there makes it a little bit difficult to do, but I look forward to seeing what you come up with.
Outstanding. All right, I take a motion.
So, in taking into account what Leanne just said,
yep.
I would move consideration of the recommended taking Rosalind Mackey Harris as our consultant for the animal control shelter and move us through the design services phase to for the cost of $21,700. And what did I do about that?
You want the county attorney to
get it? Yeah, I would like to have Jessica. Mr. Bills and her office to take a lead in negotiations on our behalf.
And bring a contract back to us on February 14th.
You should make this motion. And bring that contract back to us.
And I'll second that. Everybody clear? Further discussion? Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Passes. Thank you. Thanks, Captain.
Thank you.
Thank you for your work, guys.
Discussion and direction regarding a potential Kegley Branch Watershed Management Authority. This is Water Day.
Yeah.
Notice that this is Water Day here today? Yeah, thanks for sitting through all that. I hope you found it enlightening and entertaining.
Yeah, very much so.
driving her time is over.
You're going to make this one quick. Is that true?
Yes.
All right.
The item before you, last fall, you did give me direction. Direction from the board was given to me to reach out to all those jurisdictions, particularly the branch watershed. You need to have at least two. So one, in addition to Story County, interested in forming a watershed management authority. Last check, we do have four to five. One that would be, I think, there's probably a couple others that will come on board. Simply what I'm asking today is that you give direction for me today to go ahead and get an initial meeting set. I'm looking at possibly February 28th in the afternoon. Hopefully locating Story City, and that agenda would include what a watershed management authority is, updating on the plan and the grant that Prairie Rivers RCMD is doing in this particular watershed, having some draft bylaws and some draft 28E presented to those jurisdictions, as well as the schedule. And I would hope, based on direction from you today, I could get invitations out by this Friday.
Perfect. And let's just be sure we're clear on where those invitations are going. We need at least one of these ultimately to agree to creating a watershed in order to create a watershed. Story County, Hamilton County, City of Ames, City of Gilbert, Story County Soil and Water Conservation District, Hamilton County Soil and Water Conservation District, City of Story City, City of Roland, Hardin County, Hardin County Soil and Water District, and the City of Randall. Marty, any questions? You want me to do it? You want to do it? All right. So I would move that we. Oh, this direction. I would suggest strongly that Leanne send out the invitation to get that meeting set, and February 28th to be sounds like a great day to me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leanne.
Okay. Discussion and consideration of an increase in medical examiner investigator fee from $100 to $150. Marty Shitty.
Lisa, Mark Lane, Jessica Reynolds, and myself had an opportunity to sit down with Dr. Jamie White, our president, and county medical examiner to discuss the operation of his office last month. We came to the conclusion that we believe that he is serving the county very well and that he is using our dollars wisely in how he directs his office to conduct the investigations that they perform. And taking into account, we have two senior investigators that are operating with the dollars allocated that don't reflect the market that other counties our size allocate. I don't think it's an unreasonable request for the way that we use these two individuals that we move from $100 to $150 plus mileage. And I would ask that the board consider that.
And did you mention it's about 80 cases a year that we deal with?
No, I guess I did not.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're not talking about, we're talking about a substantial increase, but we're not talking about a dramatic overall increase when you're only talking about 80 cases.
What these do, they make the determinations on scene with the response of law enforcement agency to have a death that an unintended death would be of suspicious nature. Direction either through to Dr. White's office itself or down to the State Medical Center, State Civil as well.
And I'll make the motion that we increase from 100 to 150.
I second that.
Further discussion? Sanders, aye. Chief.
Aye.
It passes. Leanne and Carla, I don't want you guys to feel bad that when you get down to your part of the agenda, the room clears out. That shouldn't make you guys feel bad.
Yeah, I'm used to it.
Discussion and consideration of draft capital improvement plan and public review process. Leanne.
So on the agenda for the board today, the draft capital improvements plan that was being put out for public review was included, and this is an outshoot of the discussions, the budget work sessions that have taken place over the past 3 weeks. Just quickly, again, these are similar slides that the board has seen from year to year, but for those members of the public here, five fiscal years, basically include the current fiscal year is fiscal year 17, and then this goes on out through fiscal year 22 as year 5. The process we followed is defined in the draft plan, the same process we followed year after year. We organize, we identify, we select projects, and then we get to eventually adoption and implementation. Terms and definitions are the same, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but the plan does go forth and define these right in the in the crux of the document. We are looking at four different types of projects, though: equipment, new project, construction, modification of existing projects, and building maintenance. So jumping right into the current fiscal year projects, these are all ones that are current in the budget and will be finalized or will be begun, is another way to say it, this fiscal year yet. These are all in the draft plan. I just do want to note on the second slide here, and actually the draft plan itself, there are some red words in the margins. If you look at specifically page 8, for example, it says item to be discussed during calendar year 2017. When you see the Justice Center project or the infill project for this building, that is the side of that project. So as we go forward in this calendar year, even though it's included in the draft CIP at this point, we've identified no funding or isn't in any budget, either this current fiscal year nor next. But it's still an item that has been in years past in our capital improvements plan, and we have identified that the board needs to have a great discussion on that during calendar year 2017. So that is specifically the Justice Center project. Going on to fiscal year 18, these are all items that have been added to the budget for fiscal year 18, and identified as such as year one in the draft capital improvements plan. Again, we get to the Justice Center project, which notes the discussions will occur this year. So what that could simply mean is we'll be amending this to either add in dollars or to amend the project as necessary. Fiscal year 19 has two projects. That's when we begin phase two of the Iowa State Research Park, green space, and the Hickory Grove Watershed Improvement Project that is fully managed by the DNR. Fiscal year 2020 has three projects, the outbuilding storage, admin building, infill addition, and then second year phase two. Again, two of these have that red discussion mark for this calendar year. 2021 has phase three, and then 2022 we get to the second year phase three and the construction of the admin building and full addition. So the time frame that we've been following this year, we're at the bottom part of it. We're ready to go for public comment following today. That public comment period will be today through February 27th. Direction and revisions will be February 28th, and formal adoption would be on March 14th, same as the budget hearing. It will follow. I don't remember how we did this. Maybe it will precede or follow the formal. I think it precedes.
I think it precedes because it has implications on the approved budget. Yeah.
So it will be one at the same time frame as the budget hearing. The public outreach plan I'm proposing, we do social media posting. Three different segments, one right out the bat today and tomorrow, and that we have a draft plan available for comment, but focusing and drilling down February 1st, so tomorrow, just listing out the current year and fiscal year 18 projects, so those are the ones we're budgeting at this current time. A week from now, February 8th, look at 2019 and 2020 projects, and then the last 2 years, a week later. But again, social media throughout, but just really drilling down those 3 years on those 3 dates for specific years. Draft plan and comment sheet on our website and social media, as we have done in the past. Press release to go out tomorrow morning as well. Two questions I have for the board to consider, whether or not we want to do mailings of copies of the draft plan to all city halls and libraries and the comment sheets for them to have available for the general public. We
did
that last year.
Didn't do it the year before.
Didn't do it the year before, and we did not receive anything back from that. And I do want to note that we will have copies of the draft plan and comment sheets downstairs in this building, but I don't know if you want to include that to all buildings, all county facilities over the next month, early month.
Yeah, so I think it can stay just in this building, but I think we do need to send it out to all city halls, even though we didn't get any comments last time.
We're trying to be much more of a transparent organization. I think this is easy to do.
All right. Any questions, Marty?
I guess since you've had this plan document in front of yourselves, you know, the previous board has done a pretty good job of taking nothing and making it this. I guess, you know, in my little time here, that mostly this is a discussion item from almost within an intra-county document, not so much an extra county document, because I think the public is just pressing the fact that you're going to do a phasing as you can, you identify the need, you identify the dollars that you do. But, I mean, you get a discussion as far as, like, you turn around to the Justice Center on an infill basis, or you talk about the storage north of the Justice Center and whatnot. The discussions I seem to be having, or when the questions come up, it seems almost like the county employees are wondering what and when. I don't know what your experience is, but that's just in my short time that I have seen.
No, I think that's completely fair. I think this is a process that clearly didn't exist 5 years ago, and it seems to get a little better and a little more substantial every year. And I think it's been a great tool for us to try to figure out our budgeting process. And, you know, I've said all along, if you want to know where any entity's priorities are, take a look at their budget and take a look at what they're prioritizing within that budget, and it'll tell you a lot about it.
Yep.
Anything else for us, Leanne?
No.
All right, take a motion to adopt.
For new consideration of our capital, or the draft of our capital improvements plan and public review process.
And I'll second. Further discussion.
Right.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. Thanks, Leanne.
Thank you, Leanne.
No agency reports, departmental reports, community services. Boy, Carla, you had to sit over here and do a lot of stuff to get to this.
I learn a lot when I come.
Thank you for coming.
Carla Webb with Community Services. The report I'm sharing with you today is from October to December of 2016. For our general assistance program, we assisted 27 single household individuals in 23 family households for a total of 50 for this period. Year to date, we've helped 46 single individuals, 38 families, 84 total. For denials, this is where an individual is not eligible for our program, but we process their application and refer them on to other agencies. We have 212 individuals that we helped with that.
What kind of things would occur that they wouldn't be eligible?
You bet. They may be over income. They may not. They might have lost employment within the last 90 days. They haven't obtained new employment, we're unable to assist. If they don't meet a residency requirement, that requirement is that they need to be a resident living in an established domicile for a minimum of 6 consecutive months. So sometimes we'll see that. Those are probably the primary things. Once in a while, somebody might be over resources where they've got some cash on hand or savings checking.
Thank you.
We had 28 that applied with our office, and we're put in a pending state to bring additional documentation back to us, but they did not return for whatever reason. Primary types of assistance, rent, we provided $13,487.08. Utilities, $1,380.06. And then the miscellaneous, which would include primarily maybe a couple transportation, but primarily burial assistance, for a total of $11,872.50. For the emergency assistance, this is for those individuals who are trying to relocate from Crestview Mobile Home Park. During the quarter, we helped 3 single households and 2 families. Trying to recall back what those payments would have been for. I believe one was $1,000 towards deposit. Someone was able to secure housing. And we assisted an individual prepare his mobile home for being moved. So he had to get a new tongue, I believe, welded on, and that so it could be transported. And then we've also helped some individuals with storage units.
Okay.
While they had to move their items out while trying to secure housing.
Are we pretty well done with this now?
Yeah, I looked this morning. We've got 5 applications still in pending.
Okay.
We sent letters out to those individuals and asked for a response back by January 16th. We didn't hear anything by that time. We did have one person come in last Friday and visit with us, but that person has already moved. They were able to manage everything without our assistance.
Do we need to take formal action to close that out at some point?
I think at some point. I would like to see what happens at the next Board of Health meeting, I think, and then potentially bring it back to you after that. For SSI interim program, we have 1 individual that we're currently assisting in that program. And for substance abuse services, we paid on 7 commitment costs for individuals.
With AFFET, we had the revised agency budgets that came back to us in October. We had volunteers complete their liaison reports in November, and then providers also did make their reports, which were due in December. The region for FY18, the AFFET allocation recommended was $455,454. That was a 5% increase over FY17.
Yeah, I would even say 6. 5.7 goes to 6 for me.
Yes.
And I just want to commend the region. There was trepidation a couple years ago with the region being part of the asset process, and I think through your shepherding, largely, CSCS is now a great member of the asset process, so thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. For the region, I wanted to highlight some of the services that are starting new within our region, and I've noted those there for you. During this quarter, we took contracts to the governing board to start jail diversion intensive case management services in Madison County. IRA Ball Community Mental Health Services will be the provider of that service, and I believe it's just getting started at the I think Monday. So, drop-in center services. A drop-in center is getting started in Boone County. That's going to be managed by Touchwire Recovery. And the center is going to be known as the Rose Center. They have an open house, I believe, planned for February. And then we contracted with Brian Bold to provide psychiatric services in Hardin County. The psychiatrist there had retired months ago, and we've now been able to get contracted with an individual person to be available for that service in Hardin. And then also we secured a contract for outpatient and jail-based therapy services with Van Deese Medical Center for the Hamilton County area. So they'll be going into the Hamilton County jails. As well, during the quarter, we continued our work with getting 3 transitional living centers going. Those are in Warren, Hardin, and Jasper County. The Hardin County Center, I believe, opened in December. All 3 facilities are going to be 4 beds. And I believe as of last week, I think Hardin County was going to be full. So we have 4 individuals in 4 beds there. I have provided to you, I emailed it out yesterday, I believe it was, the November DHS Mental Health and Disability Services Redesign Report, and I included Jody Eaton's administrative report to the Governing Board this month, which I think summarizes a lot of that report. If you don't have time to look through the entire report, even just looking at Jody's report, I think it'll give you some good insight. And then also we worked on the CISSC 2016 annual report. That was due to DHS in December, so we had that approved by our governing board in November and got that submitted. There are specific areas that we have to report on in the annual report. That includes access to standards, or report on the access standards for core services. There's time frames that have to be met on when services become available for a person, how soon they can access those. Report on our additional core services, provider practices and competencies, data reports for individuals served, monies expended, and outcomes achieved. Something new that we're going to be moving into here starting in July is serving a brain injury population group. We brought this request before the governing board in November, and they were supportive of that. So we have been working on amending our management plan also to add this population group into it, which was approved by our advisory board and the governing board last week. The employment committee, which I am a part of, we've started to take steps as looking at developing a salary matrix that would identify the maximum regional salary contribution for CICS funded positions. Lynn Adams and I have been appointed by the committee to work on developing that, and I've reached out to Alyssa Whitnall for her assistance. She's agreed to help us with that. Something new that we're doing as well is offering opportunity for staff within the region if they have interest to become a trainer, that we want to work with them on that. So we've developed a training policy. We want to encourage staff who have an interest in doing trainings to to take that on and then be available to go out and train providers. We're looking at some specific areas for training in the area of mental health first aid, cultural competency and diversity, co-occurring disorders, trauma-informed care, and crisis intervention training. We've developed a training policy, and there's an application process that staff would have to go through in order to be chosen for this opportunity. They do have to receive approval from their employing county, and I visited with Alyssa on that because there's one particular area, the crisis intervention training, where we may have a staff person that's interested in being a facilitator for that training. So okay. We'll see where that goes. And I believe I may have mentioned previously, but if not, I apologize. We have contracted with Trilux Marketing Group to help us with development of a website. We have a website currently, but we need a lot of improvements. So we've contracted with them, and they're presently working on that, as well as working with us on marketing activities and that. And we just recently got in the logo.
Outstanding. Any movement on permanent CEO?
That was recently discussed just last week. It was directed to come back to the employment committee for a recommendation to be brought to governing board next month. The DHS report does recommend a permanent CEO position. And our advisory board last week passed a resolution unanimously to recommend the governing board to have a permanent CEO position. So I believe that will be taken up next month.
Thank you.
You bet. Other activities for our office in November, we had two staff that participated in the Scoop of Soup event that was held in Ames to bring attention to hunger and homelessness, and we had two staff that assisted with the VA supermarket. Outreach was done in meeting with Common Ground community outreach members regarding services our office provides and community resources. I participated in a League of Women Voters of Iowa meeting to share information regarding mental health services and funding. And there's an opioid task force committee that has been formed in Story County. This committee is a subcommittee of the Mental Health Criminal Justice Task Force group. We're working to identify the prevalence of opioid abuse dependency in Story County and ways we can foster education to try and have an impact on that ever-growing epidemic. Any questions for me?
Carl, great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see. No other reports. Public Forum 2, opportunity for John to comment on items not on today's agenda. If John wishes not to do so, we'll move on. We can't take any action due to the open meeting requirements. Anything today? You take off your league hat and comment if you want to. Appreciate you sitting all the way through it. I really like it that you're here making sure that what's happening over here is reported back to the league, and so thank you very much. Liaison assignments, Marty.
Well, you pulled one off the top because we as a region will be taking up Julie Jetter's recommendation that we appoint a permanent CEO. And we had a very lively discussion for the region in regards to how we're going to go about it. And we will bring that back, of course, next month. Rec Center here in Story County is the hospital pushing. It's trying to get, you know, the data component, the data city data component, plus any additional stakeholders involved. We are in the meeting this week. Looking forward to going to the DESCO, you know, event here this afternoon. What else have I got? Down here was a lightning hour and change we spent with the sheriff going over the frailties and the overview of the 911 system, knowing that we have a sizable project awaiting this. And lastly, I actually got a chance to pull. You know, there it is. I'm seeing the money. A chance to pull together the City of Nevada, the Story County Hospital, and Erica Peterson, as this school here in Nevada displaces the Ames Boys and Girls Club. We had an opportunity taking place down the street as the second phase opens up their ops space, and the PT would be an oversized opportunity that we're likely we'll see going from the middle school here in the day that just down the street and it's Boys and Girls Club, and I understand there's been substantial growth year over, so that's a good thing.
sounds like a win-win-win to me.
Oh, sorry. It was just dumb not to get all done in place at the same time.
So for me, attended in Deb's absence, as Deb lies on the beach on a Caribbean island right now, I attended in her stead to the Healthy Life Center conversation last night. That continues to advance. It's worth everybody keeping their eye on where that goes, but there's a lot of work yet to come. I'll underscore in case you guys missed me mentioning it. Today at 3 p.m. and 3:30 and 6 p.m. There is a open house on the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor out at the ISU Research Park Hub, and it's worth getting to and giving your input as that project gets fully and finally developed. Any announcements?
No.
None from me. I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Austin, I look forward to seeing how you're going to fit.